We all have weaknesses. We will always have weaknesses. The key is to create your Avengers superstar team of the right superpowers. Mm-hmm. And be aware of the ones that you can't do. So, what's his name? Hulk is not trying to fly.
Yes.
He just runs through a wall.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh. Yes. Wonder Woman, she has that, you know, hakuboko, right?
That's someone that plays her in the background.
Yes. And so, yes, exactly. And so it's like, what is your superpower? And if you don't know it, that's the beginning of the problem. When you see people sailing on a boat, there's somebody in charge of something at any given time. Mm-hmm. If you can sail a boat by yourself, but if you have multiple people and you have to go pull the rope with this guy, pull the rope with that girl, pull the sail with that, then you have not assembled the right team. Or you're not letting people do what they're supposed to, or you're not sending the right commands, you're not clear.
Hi everyone, welcome to Modern Workplace Conversations, where we explore critical and often under-discussed topics within the professional world. Every week, we feature experts ranging from HR professionals to operators to lawyers and CEOs to provide you with diverse perspectives on workplace issues, trends, and best practices. Tell me, what do you do with a team full of unique people? How do you unearth their unique strengths and weaknesses? Do you have a leadership philosophy? And how do you get one? How can you seamlessly blend personal work culture with organizational culture without a conflict? And also, how do you conduct a self-assessment that helps you realize your risk-to-impact ratio as you go on your career journey? On this week's episode of Modern Workplace Conversations, I discussed all this and more with Ebi Atawadi, Director of Products at Google, specifically building YouTube Studio. Let's get into the conversation. I'm Oluwani Femi Kolawole, Senior Editor at TechPoint Africa.
So, Ebi, I'm honored to be here today. And I love that you gave me this audience, and I'm looking forward to the awesome conversation we're going to have.
My pleasure. I mean, you reached out to me a couple of months ago, and this was meant to be a virtual chat.
Yes.
But what are the odds that I end up in Lagos and we're here in person? So
I
guess
that
the universe wanted us to have this conversation. Yes.
That might be the conversation with Evie. I kept to myself. I didn't announce it.
But Sha, you didn't tell me I needed to wear makeup when we were recording video. So... You came with lipstick. Me, I came with mascara. That's all I have.
Still nice. Nobody's gonna know it's natural beauty. Okay. I'm impressed by how much leadership you've held. And the first time I was going to hear your name was, I think then I was still covering startups, and I was doing a bit of what's it called, global tech companies that are expanding into the country. And I thought that it's not easy, like, moving from one company to another without having something you hold on to. So I would like to have, like, an idea of your philosophy to leadership, because you have to undo people throughout these clients.
Absolutely. It's not easy. Yeah. And I love that you say philosophy, because that's actually one of my favorite interview questions. Obviously, I care about the answer, but the answer is not so much important. It's more that you've actually thought about one, and you've thought about, like, when I show up in the world as a leader, this is how I want to show up, because that's what you will carry through, right? And I talk about this notion of micro and macro sort of cultures. We'll talk about that later. But my philosophy can actually be summarized in two analogies. The first one is, and I don't know where I got this from, but somewhere, some brilliant person wrote it, and I just held on to it. If I asked you to make tea, and okay, the tea fanatics will come and say cold water can be used too, sure. But let's say I asked you to make tea, like loose, really nice tea, and you poured like room temperature water, tepid water, onto the tea, what would happen?
You want to make the tea, it won't bring out the flavor.
Exactly. And so one of my philosophies in life, and just with work specifically, is everybody is some tea. And if you're really into tea, there's black tea, there's rooibos, there's, you know, green tea, oolong, etc. And those who are really into tea, they're actually different temperatures. The right temperature, it's usually not 100 degrees, it's like 95, 85, 90, or you burn the tea. So that's one.
Yeah.
And then two, you don't want to leave tea steeping for too long. So when you put black, if you take your Lipton, put it in hot water. Some people want light tea, some want like dark, you know. But the longer you leave it in there, the more bitter it becomes, right? And that's how I think about my philosophy with leadership. It's that you are all some tea. You already made that tea. And all we're trying to do is bring out the best of your flavor.
Hmm.
And so it's my job. So first of all, it is not going to be room temperature. It will either be cold or it'll be hot. Yeah. Most likely hot, because you're dealing with me. Right? And it might feel uncomfortable. And I say this to my people, when I join a team, one of the first things I do is say, how do you like to work? How do you like to... I have this sort of one-on-one meeting just to establish what are some of the best things you got from a previous manager? How can I feel, make sure I feel that? But then I also share my leadership philosophy, which is this analogy. Mm. And so I say, you know, it's my job for us to find that temperature for you to together. We're not going to leave you in that hot water for too long or you become too bitter.
Mm-hmm.
We're not going to put too much hot water on you, we'll burn you. It's a very fine balance of finding the sweet spot where your flavor comes out. And it feels like stress. But tell me the time when you have learned in your life. If I to ask you, tell me the moments where you're like, I was learning the fastest in my life. It was high intensity. There was heat.
Yes.
The kitchen was hot. Mm-hmm. And you're like, damn it, I'm learning. And you come out of that and you're like, I survived that. There's more of me.
Mm-hmm.
You know that feeling?
Yes, yes.
But there's also the extreme where you're like, oh, what is it?
You
know?
They
want to kill me for my, you know? And that's not where we're trying to get to. But it's also not like doing nothing.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody... No human, I believe, wants that. So that's my number one leadership philosophy. That's the first part. And that's my job as a leader. The second one is that, I'm a trampoline for your career. So careers are long.
Hmm.
And I remind people of this, careers are long. You will meet people again.
Mm-hmm.
You'll meet them multiple times. You'll meet them when you're going up. You'll meet them when you're coming down, right?
Sure.
And so it's very important that you think about the bigger picture. Even if you're a lifer in a company, careers in that company are long.
Mm-hmm.
And so think about how you show up and how you impact the feeling that you leave people with, right?
Mm-hmm.
Were you a jerk? Were you a bully? Were you tough, but people knew your intentions were good? Because they will remember that. They'll remember how you made them feel,
yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
And so for me, my big thing is, being in the position, a very privileged position, to help people, nurture people, different stages. I was a first line manager where I was just managing people directly.
Mm-hmm.
I've been a second line manager where I'm managing managers of managers.
Mm-hmm.
I've been a third line manager where I'm managing managers of managers of managers.
Mm-hmm.
You understand? And
yeah.
Along the way, I've watched people come in. I've watched them close gaps. Supercharge their strengths, which is another life thing. You know, superpowers talk about their superpowers, not their weaknesses.
Mm.
Right? We overemphasize weaknesses. We all have weaknesses. We will always have weaknesses. The key is to create your Avengers superstar team of the right superpowers.
Mm-hmm.
And be aware of the ones that you can't do. So, what's his name? Hulk is not trying to fly.
Yes, yes.
He just runs through a wall.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh.
Yes.
Wonder Woman, she has that, you know, hakuboko, right?
That's something that plays in the background.
Yes, and so, yes, exactly. And it's just like, what is your superpower? And if you don't know it, that's the beginning of the problem.
Hmm.
So it's my job to help you be a trampoline for your career by amplifying those superpowers that you already have, or you don't even know you have, but you haven't realized you have them.
Yeah.
To say, you know, you are really good at, somebody went to him, Ibi, you know, you are really good at storytelling.
Mm-hmm.
And it stuck with me. And that's been one of my things. Oh, I'm a really good storyteller.
Hmm.
Or I try to be. Let me be humble.
No,
I'm Nigerian. We don't really do humility.
Yeah, it seems...
Does that...
Those are my two. Leadership is... Yes, I know. I know leadership is quite like... I stress work because this is a room full of people and you want to know different strengths, different weaknesses so that it can fit into the whole purpose.
Yes.
And I don't know, how do you do that without... after you ask them, so every other day everybody has to be involved in one thing or the other, and you want them to, sometimes you just want them all hands on deck to do something, and you know that this person, this is how much they can go, this is how much they can withstand. How does it not clash?
That's a multi-part question, so I'll try to unpack it a little bit. There's one part which is this continual, so you're going to have sort of three cadences of meetings with people on the team.
Okay.
So I, for example, always have a one-on-one with my direct reports.
Mm-hmm.
So people report directly into me.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes I'll do skip level, meaning the people that directly report to my direct reports, N minus two, basically. So N minus one, me minus one, and me minus two. But as you scale, actually a good job is like I can disrupt myself.
To be
if I still am needed, that's my philosophy, another one. if I'm still needed, then I'm not growing the people correctly, or I don't have the right people.
Mm-hmm. If you can't, like,
just otherwise we're stuck. Yeah. Yes, because I need to go. I also need to elevate. Mm-hmm. So if I'm just, you know, there's some leaders who do that. They're like, I need to be needed. Make every. That's not who I am, and I actually don't think that's leadership. That's just being a boss or a manager.
It's not LD.
I don't think you get the best out of time with that, right? Mm-hmm. Like, nobody wants to be a bottleneck. I use a lot of sailing analogies, like sailing on a boat. When you see people sailing on a boat, there's somebody in charge of something at any given time. Mm-hmm. If you can sail a boat by yourself, mm-hmm. but if you have multiple people and you have to go pull the rope with this guy, pull the rope with that girl, pull the sail with that, then you have not assembled the right team, or you're not letting people do what they're supposed to, or you're not sending the right commands, you're not clear. Mm-hmm. So going back to your question, I think there are multiple components. I think the first component is, you know, an understanding of the person, sort of a reflection, going back to what we just talked about. So I literally have a slide. I have it, I'll share it with you later, you can link it in, whatever. But I have a slide that I make people fill out. So even when people come to me on like LinkedIn, it's a bit contentious to say, but I absolutely hate those inbounds. And they're like, something on my career, can I grab 30 minutes of your time to, I'm like, no, you don't know. Because one, you don't have respect for my time. Two, you don't know what you want. Hmm. Come to me with a clear question. I'm at this stage, I'm trying to be a product manager. What should I do to whatever, insert problem here, get a job, get skills, that I can give you an answer. Don't come to me with, I want tips or mentorship for my career. So that's my first task, actually. A lot of people don't take two steps back to say, hold on a second, what do I care about in the world? Hmm. What are the topics that, when I'm talking about them, my heart sinks? And we all have them. There might be things you do for work. There might be things you don't do for work. But it's important to know them. And we'll get to why.
Yes.
The second part is now, what are your superpowers? So when, let's say, you know, we want to build a team and we're like, okay, she's really known for, if you need something done, you need any contacts, that's the person you call. You know what I mean?
Yes.
Or
yes.
If you need somebody who's going to go and negotiate and, you know, that's the person. Mm-hmm. That's what you want. Like when people say, if you need X, call me. Yes. If you don't know what that X is, you need to sit down and reflect. Mm-hmm. What is the X I want to be known for? And it cannot be everything. Mm-hmm. Usually 3 to 5 things, mm-hmm. right? Like if you want vision and strategy, I'm your girl. If you want organizational design, I'm your girl. If you want vision and storytelling, I'm your girl. If you want to figure out how to land a message in the most, you know, you don't want to hurt feelings, I'm not your girl. I don't.
You're like.
I'm direct.
Okay.
And I say it's a feature, not a bug. It's a feature of AB, the product of AB. You know, because that's, and we're products of our childhood. Mm-hmm. I came from a mother who, you get 9 out of 10, she'll say, the person that got 10 out of 10, they have 2 heads.
I know
you know
that.
Where I'm going. So, you know, I mean, I don't do sandwiching. I'm not going to give you good feedback, then bad feedback, then good feedback. I'll just work on you knowing that I care about you. So when the feedback comes, it's direct. Mm-hmm. So don't use me for like, you know, you want to soften people's.
Yes. But then I lean
on. Yeah, but I lean on people in my team who are good at that. So I'll say, I'm about to make a reorganization, for example. And I know someone on my team who's really good at like people's feelings. Mm-hmm. What's the sentiment of the team? Do you think we should announce it now? What else should we do? Oh, let's do off-site where we do fun and games. So yeah, so you identify people on the team who have strengths to support your weaknesses. That's actually assembling the right team. So first is understanding that. So actually have this conversation with people if they're, what do you care about in the world? What are your superpowers? What are your weaknesses?
Yeah.
And I try not to overemphasize, let's solve your weaknesses. Those might be weaknesses you have forever. Mm. Some are weaknesses you're not aware of. So I'll actually challenge you. Do you know that you're not really good at writing? How do we improve your writing? Because you can't succeed in this job without writing. Here are 3 books that are good on writing. Here are tips to improve your writing. And we'll improve. So we'll try to mitigate the weaknesses. Let's make them not bad, neutral at least. Or some actually, I've seen people turn their weakness into a strength just because they'd never invested in it. Mm-hmm. You see what I mean?
Yes.
But don't overemphasize the weakness. So that's number one. Number two is, so going back to this question of like, how do you match?
Yes.
Number two is, where is this person? So I there's a simple diagram. I'm going to just call it out, but I'll draw it. And on the sort of y-axis, I call out impact.
Okay.
What's the impact to the company? And on the right axis, essentially what I'm trying to do is known unknowns, risks, right? And it's sort of risk awareness. And what I'm trying to figure out on this is, where is this person? And the thing they're about to do, where are they on this chart? So let's say there's a massive project. Okay. It involves 10 stakeholders. It's a $1 million project. If it goes bad, there's a brand awareness, blah, 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 blah. And as a leader, I can see that. Because, you know, leadership over time, it just becomes experience and like pattern matching. Yeah. Oh, I've seen this problem before. This is similar to that other thing, right? And 98% of the time, that's the case. And leadership is also the awareness of when it's the 2% you don't know, right? But that 2% changes as you scale, right?
Yes.
So my 2% now, my 2% now is different from 2% when I become the next level. My 2% now is different from where I was before. So when I think about your awareness of risk, the more senior you are, the more the awareness of risk increases. When I start my career, naturally, I'm going to be somewhere in the bottom where my awareness of risk is low. I've just not seen it before. I don't know what I don't know. And the impact of the things they'll give me to do might be low. But if they happen to say, I want to test this person, move them up, the awareness of risk is still low, but let me see if they can stretch on impact. Then the way I handle that person and support them on that project will be different. My job becomes, the impact is high, so I can't afford you to make a mistake on your awareness of risk. And I'll, you know, set up the check-ins and things to make sure. I might set up more frequent check-ins. I might tell you, be more proactive in updating me weekly. Weekly problems, plans, progress. You know what I mean?
Yes.
If it's a small thing, just tell me when there's a problem. It's small impact.
Yes.
Nobody,
yes.
no one, how does it, no
not
one?
Going to affect
no one, nobody died,
yes,
you know?
Yes.
But then as you get more senior, your awareness of risk will increase. So what tends to happen is that you should move up here. You should start getting higher impact things where your awareness of risk, so you kind of are going like this. You're going, your career progression is like that. Of course, you have ups and downs. So you have moments where the impact is actually quite high, but your awareness of risk is low. So you go from there to there, and you make a mistake. You'll never make that mistake again, right? You learn from it. Or if you have a good leader, you know, you at least be able to, and yourself, you reflect and say, what was the mistake I made? So I think about this and where the person is, and what you tend to find, the superstars are the ones who tend to get, they get quicker at knowing what they don't know. The more you know, the more you realize you don't know anything.
True.
In life.
Yes, yes.
And so the best, the strongest players I found are the ones who, they start stretching this way even before they start going, their awareness of risk increases where they're mitigating it. And I'm like, ah, you're ready for more. So I push you up. You keep going, you're ready for more. I push you up. If you're not ready for more, then I give you an opportunity to test, where are you? Because we don't know until we put you in the situation.
It
can be theoretical. And so the best way to do that is experience. The other way is to like literally ask other people who've gone through it. A lot of people are so egotistical. They think they can figure it out. Sometimes it's like, hey, you did that. Like, what were some of the best practices that you had that you would, if you were to do it again, what would you do differently? Right. Yeah. So that's my number two. It's matching what we are doing and where you are on this, plus what your superpowers and weaknesses are. Because sometimes that will play in this, because your awareness of risk might not be, let's say, the one we said about writing. You might not realize, oh, actually, there's a need to properly kick off this project because people are not on the same page of what we're doing. So let me just do a quick 30 minutes meeting. Here's the goal of this project. Here's who's doing what. Here are the timelines. Any concerns? Let's do a pre-mortem, not a post-mortem. So let's actually talk about what are the risks. Everybody, what's on your chest? What's making you... How do we now mitigate it? So it's on the table. You know, it's things like that. These are the tips and tricks that I've picked up along the way from getting it wrong. This whole podcast can be all the lessons I learned where I was doing high impact, but low awareness of risk, right? And that's the job.
You've mentioned like so much about what where I was going to, because handling a company or handling people has to do with communicating a lot with them, knowing what they can do, what they can't do.
Correct.
And it's one, it's a huge part of the company's culture.
And it's an ongoing conversation.
Yes.
So you're now starting to touch on culture. So I'm loving this. That's cool.
So it's a huge part of the company's culture.
Absolutely.
Because if you remove the people from the culture, there's no culture as it were. And this is a huge part of it. Understanding people, knowing what to push to them, knowing what not to push to them. So I think we should just move from there to a company's culture and looking at how you've I don't know whether you've imported culture from the different companies you've worked with, or you brought yours and you expected them to embrace it. So let's talk about company culture and how you've been able to diversify in all the places you've been.
It's both.
Import and you brought yours.
Yes. And so let's start first by defining culture.
Okay.
Right? Because everybody has a different understanding of culture. Culture are the social norms, ideas, beliefs, and behaviors of a group of people. Period.
Yeah.
Right? So norms, meaning what is normal, behaviors, how they behave, we're talking about that now, and the ideas and beliefs, right? So if you have a culture of the belief is we strive for excellence and nothing else, that's the culture that you will create. So for example, I just joined the Lego board and we were doing the onboarding for Lego. And Lego, I mean, you played with Legos. I played with Legos. Yeah. My nephews and nieces are playing with Legos. You understand, it's like a multi-generational thing. And so one of the things I loved about Lego was there was a story they told, it's in the, you know, of when the one of the sons of the founder, 90 years ago, they used to make, the toys were initially wooden.
Okay.
And then you would, they would lacquer the wood, you know, to like, you know, lacquer on the wood. Okay. And he always wanted three coats. So the son coated once and then sold the toys and it was cheaper. The father came back and said, go and collect all the toys you sold and re-lacquer them. And it became part of the culture. One of the ethos is only the best is good enough. And that's a belief. It's so in the company that when you go and you see it at every level, that's just an idea. Another one that I had at Netflix, I saw at Netflix, was this whole idea of like, we're not a family. Let's be honest. No, let's be honest. Some people don't like their family. Let's be honest. You don't get to choose your family.
Yeah, right.
But Netflix's philosophy is you get to choose your teammates. Or you get to be part of a team. If you're on an Olympic team, that, you know, family, you might have one. We would uncle, you might have one. We all have, you know, our extended families. You know, we're all rock stars, but we all have family members that, you know, but we don't get to pick. And some companies want that culture where it's like you're part of a family, we'll find a place for you, we'll manage you, you understand? And some cultures, like Netflix's culture, was, no, we will not manage you. When the time has come and you're no longer Michael Jordan, you're not able to, you're not Michael Jordan, 33, able to dunk the way he dunked, sorry, 23, sorry, you're not able to dunk the way he did, you move on. Michael Jackson, Michael Jordan is not dunking the way he was dunking then when he was at the Chicago Bulls. Michael Jordan was not playing, people don't realize he went and played baseball. He didn't do as well as Michael Jordan in basketball. And that's one of the ideas and beliefs, right? So that's why I say it's both. I have AB's ideas and beliefs. I always say I am, I might have a Dutch passport, but I'm Nigerian through and through. And one of the things I will always bring is I believe that we can overcome any adversary because I've seen it in my country. If you're not ready to overcome, we're so resilient. I don't think we even realize how resilient we are. Our own running water. It's a mini government in your house.
Yes.
Your own power.
Yeah.
Your own water. Your own garbage disposal.
Everything.
Everything. You know, so it's like we're such a resilient group of people and we believe in possibilities. And that I carry that wherever I go. And that's what we were talking about earlier. There's a macro culture and a micro culture. And so let's take Lagos. There's a different behavior from Lagos Island people.
Yes.
To Lekki people.
After that bridge.
To Old Ikoyi. To New Ikoyi.
To Aja.
To Aja. To Butemeta. To Yaba. Their behaviors, right? Yes, well, yes. It's all Lagos. But you can't say an Ikeja GRA person. They have different beliefs. They're like, ah, we're old money. We're, you know, to a... I don't want to call any place. I mean, not call any.
No need.
But you get what I'm saying. So you always have micro and macro cultures. You always have AB... In the family of the Atawadis, we have a culture. And there's AB's culture of what I believe. So there's this macro, micro. Then there's the culture of my father's family. There's a culture of my mother's family. I'm both.
So how do you like link up to everything?
It goes back to what I was saying of, one, the question you asked me at the beginning. I spent time thinking about that. How do I want to show up in the world? What matters to me? And it's an ongoing conversation. There was a time in my life when I was like 10 over 10. If you ask me for 100, I'll bring you 200. I'm not that person anymore. I don't believe I can give you the best of me if I haven't slept. I don't think actually anybody can give you the best of them if they haven't slept. But young AB, when I was 21, she'd be like, 3 hours on sleep, sleep is commercial. AB of today, if you, if you don't, if I don't get 8 hours of sleep, you're not getting a good age. You understand what I mean? Mm-hmm. And so it also evolves. But going back to the cultures and the conversation around the practices, that's the higher order definition. The most simplistic definition is culture are the good behaviors you reward and the bad behaviors you tolerate.
Tolerate.
Because it's both, right? You just took the negative.
Yes,
right?
Yes, I get
if you that. Tolerate some, you punish the rest. Mm. You understand what I'm saying? Okay. So when we do things like, there was a time in Nigeria where you couldn't throw trash on the streets.
Mm-hmm.
You would be punished. They would actually koboko whip you.
Yes.
Back in the day.
Yeah.
You go to some parts of Nigeria now, people just throw trash on the streets.
Mm-hmm.
You go to somewhere like Banana Island, there is no trash.
Mm-hmm.
By accident. You see what I mean?
Yes.
So it's the good behaviors you reward and the bad behaviors you tolerate. And there are certain bad behaviors I do not tolerate, regardless whether the company says that's okay.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, there's just some things I have carried along with me.
Mm-hmm.
Like I say to people that join my team, this is not where you come if you don't want hot water. Not hot water to burn you.
Yes,
hot, like
yes.
We just described hot water. I don't want this to be taken out of context.
Your quality.
That's just not who, it's not the leader that I am. And I make that very clear also when I'm interviewing how I show up as a leader. Like, are you looking for that for this team? You get what I mean?
Yeah.
Which is why I come in a lot when a team needs to do a turnaround. Like, I'm that leader. I will help you change course.
Mm-hmm.
So with that perspective of culture, what I've learned along the way are a couple of things. One is, if you don't intentionally create a culture, one will be created.
Mm-hmm. Because everybody's coming from different backgrounds.
Yes, and it will be. We will start to accept certain things. We will start to, you know, like when I remember when I moved back and people were like, you know, won't you just collect some, you know what I'm talking
yes,
about
here. Yes, I guess.
Why do we think that's normal? And I'm like, no, that's not, but that's...
People have internalized
we've made
it,
that
it's part of the fabric.
Correct, and it's, you know what I mean? And we all know it's wrong. We all complain, this government, that, whatever. But somehow it's somehow accepted in the way that some people do these things in certain companies.
Mm-hmm.
So that's one part. The other part is, you know, and that's why I said the bad behaviors we tolerate.
Because if you're not tolerating them, they should not be there.
Yes. The other one we tolerate is time.
Mm.
All my friends know me. My people know me, even at Google. If you show up 5 minutes, so I give a 10-minute grace. At the 10-minute mark, say the meeting's 4. You show up 4:10, I've left. It's okay, I'm not angry, but the meeting is over.
Mm-hmm.
So you can choose,
yeah.
Right? If you are coming somewhere, like if I'm going somewhere, 5 minutes is my tolerance of like being late. Mm-hmm. I will leave early to be there. Whereas in Nigeria, it's very common that everybody shows up 1 hour or 2 hours late.
Mm-hmm.
And so my belief is time is our most valuable asset. And so when I used to work, for example, at Etisalat, and my team would run events, people knew my event started on time. It was known.
Yeah.
You can show up late, the event would have finished.
Yeah.
Go ask around. It was known. AB's events, they will start on time and they will finish on time. Because that's what I, you know, and that's what I become known for.
Mm.
Whether it is a norm or not.
Mm.
You get what I'm
yes.
coming from? So over time, what I've come to learn is the bigger the mass, the more the culture starts to create microcultures.
Mm.
Right?
Yes.
And it's actually healthy. You want to encourage that. But the more intentionality you need to do to create that macro culture,
mm-hmm.
this is what Nigeria stands for, right? When they say Swiss engineering, German engineering, don't come by accident now.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yes, yes. You have to define it.
What that is. So otherwise, it will define itself. So there is always, so to your question, there is always a company culture.
Mm-hmm.
It might just not be written. There'll be we don't do that here.
Yeah.
The way it works here, that's culture.
But does it have to be written?
I think the best way humans, you know, express things and allow it evolve is to write it down.
Documentation.
Document it to say, hey, these are our 5 tenets. So for my team, I have mm-hmm. what I call like my 6 principles.
Yeah.
You know, we're all one team. No person is a no op. We're owners.
Yeah.
So nobody, you know, so I have these things I write out that I carry with me and they've evolved over time.
Yeah.
But also when I go into companies, the first thing I ask, like, what's the culture? Like, tell me what the culture is. So I know which parts I need to tolerate,
mm-hmm.
you know, or which parts I'll be like, you guys can't tolerate this. It's not for me. For example, meetings.
Mm-hmm.
It is known culture within the company that the tolerance is up to 5 minutes. But everybody knows. People even say, I have an AB meeting next. Me, the Nigerian, with all the rainbows.
Right?
They're like, I have an AB meeting next. she will be there on time. And so I think that's so important. And then for us is to ask the question, how does this culture empower me? And if the answer is nothing, start looking for somewhere else that empowers you. Or start deciding whether it's you're willing to make a trade-off for what. Maybe I'm here for now because I want to learn these skills, going back to the strengths and weaknesses. Yeah. I'm here for now because it'll help with my CV. But be aware of the culture that exists, and that's if that's what you want to stand for. Because when we're in an environment, regardless of what you think, you absorb what's around you.
Exactly.
So as I say, show me your friends and I'll show you who you are. Show me your colleagues and I'll show you who you are. You stay there for a long time, human beings average out to the average intelligence averages out in a space. So you start dumbing yourself down, right? But if you're in a place like, you know, where everybody's like straight shooters, go-getters, you also want to challenge yourself and push up. So it's so important to ask this question.
Yes. So I want to believe that any employer or a manager or leader that listens to this, we not get started next time they ask, what's your culture?
Right.
What's your company's culture? Right. You have to have something that you live by. I think a good way to round up this conversation is to talk about how a company's culture affects their brand. Because I've heard a number of times that people say you sell yourself to an employer, the way an employer sells themselves to the employer, the same way the employee tries to sell themselves to them. So how do we use our culture to build a brand that would be attractive to talent, good ones at that? Because good talent do not want to say where it's anyhow. So how do you build
it's
your,
a good question. I think it just goes, we've kind of said it,
okay,
right? So, you know, now, there's some brands that are a facade, but that doesn't last for a long time. There is no brand that puts out something and says, we are excellence, but you're not doing excellence. It comes out. Nothing is hidden under the sun. You always find the cultures, there's always a ripple effect, right, that impacts the company. If you're a company of not quality, by the time you get recalls, it's the first time when, you know, when they do, sorry, not to call out a company, but like, now when they do the flight sequence, if I'm in a new Boeing, I'm like, let me take notes. Because we've all heard of the issues they had, because I don't know what they were doing, cutting, I don't know, I actually don't want to speculate. But like, it's affected the brand. And I'm sure if you go into it, that's from some culture that has allowed, whether it's people not speaking up when they saw an issue, because maybe they didn't feel ownership. Whatever it is, I don't know what it is, I don't want to speculate. But the impact has impacted
on
the brand.
Yes.
Go to any company, look at the oil spill in Mexico, where it was like something because they cut costs. So you said we're a culture of excellence on paper, but you didn't live it through, and then you have that impact. The whole world sees that what you were saying was bullshit, excuse my language. So that's, I think, what it is. It's like, be aware of the culture, live the culture. You go back and research a company and have they lived up to the culture they're selling. And when I'm in interviews, you said it spot. I was interviewed, I had 6 interviews at Google. I interviewed them back 14 times.
Wow.
And I told them, I said, you know what you're getting and who you're getting, right? But like, this is how I operate. Like, this is such, it is a one-way door decision, so to speak. Meaning, it's not something I can, if it was just to paint this wall in my house, I want to paint this wall pink. I can paint this small wall pink. And if it's not, if it's ugly, I'll repaint it. Okay. But if I want to build this building, that is a one-way door decision. You make that decision, it's expensive to undo it. Career changes are you can always leave, of course. But they came to me, I was happy at Netflix. So I'm like, explain to me why I'm joining. And I grilled them. Each of the leaders, what is your leadership philosophy? Like, how are you, what skills do you believe you don't have that you think I'm bringing to the table? Then you have to think. And I'm like, okay, great. This one, actually, that's not my skill. If that came through, that's actually not my power. You know, I might need help with this. And that's when we now have the conversation of how I show up as a leader. Interview them 14 times.
Whoa.
Backwards. Yes. I met multiple people. I met my hiring manager like 6 times. I met the chief product officer, now the CEO. I met a lot of people.
Goals.
Of course, I was not at my junior level of my career, I couldn't have done that.
Yeah, I guess.
But the point is, like, it shows, you know, I think at the, you know, it shows for them as well that I care about the decisions I make. And I think that also set the tone. Someone even said, if the way you hire is the way you interviewed, I have no doubts about who you're hiring. There was a candidate where, you know, I know you're going to look for the right thing. So I think the last thing I'll say is a lot of people don't realize how much agency they have. And a lot of time we feel like we don't have agency. We're talking about this just before. And I genuinely believe that once you tell the universe what you want, it conspires to give you what you want. I was like, oh, I'm going to do an MBA. I'm going to leave. I'm going to go to the, you know, because I was in Nigeria. I was like, I'll do an MBA. I'll quit Etisalat. I quit Etisalat. I'll travel the world, rest, do an MBA, and then maybe I'll end up at some place like Google or McKinsey. I never got the MBA. Didn't work at McKinsey. And here I am at Google.
But you traveled the world.
Sorry?
But you traveled.
I traveled for like 2 months and then Uber found me. But the point was, and it was, if I tell you the story, it's so coincidental that if I just didn't show up to that event, I wouldn't have met the guy who said I should apply. It was, it's so, you know, like, wow. You know, one of those moments where it's like, oh my God, serendipity.
Yes.
But it's, I don't think it's serendipity. I think it's you manifested, you wanted something. The universe conspired to bring it to you. And so the first step is actually daring to manifest what you want.
Knowing that you can make it happen.
Yes, and at least you start to see the doors. And sometimes some doors shut because it's not for you. Right? Some doors shut and it's like, that was not for me. And I can, the whole other story of all the doors that shut, that I think I would still be in the UK today, probably earning, you know, a tenth of what I'm earning. If I had not left my very first job, where they were like, oh, we're ending your contract. And I, the, my, it felt like my world came down. And I was like, oh my God, the very next week, I got a job that was twice the pay. So sometimes doors shut for a reason, because there are more doors that are about to, out to be open. But we also have to do the work.
Yes, you just preached to me.
I'm not a pastor, but I do like to preach.
Right, you did, you did. But thank you very much, Ebi, for speaking with me and everyone that's going to listen to this. I'm looking forward to another opportunity to have you probably for 2 hours. And we're going to have these conversations again. Thank you very much.